80. To fight the rain. You must become king of everything. From the diagram, tenets of instruction, back of the footboard, paragraph 1.
Shallan fought against the wind, pulling her storm coat, stolen from a soldier. Close around her, she struggled up the slick incline. Brightness? Gaz asked. He grabbed his cap to keep it from blowing free. Are you certain you want to do this? Of course I am, Shallan said. Whether or not what I'm doing is wise, well, that's another story. These winds were unusual for the weeping, which was supposed to be a period of placid rainfall, a time for contemplating the Almighty, a respite from high storms. Maybe things were different out here in the Stormlands. She pulled herself up the rocks. The shattered plains had grown increasingly rough as the armies traveled inward, now on the 8th day of the expedition, following Shallan's map, created with the help of Relaine, the former bridgeman. Shallan crested the rock formation and found the view that the scouts had described. Vatha and Gaz stomped up behind her, muttering about the cold. The heart of the shattered plains extended before Shallan, the inner plateaus, never explored by men. It's here, she said. Gaz scratched at the socket beneath his eye patch. Rocks? Yes, Guardsman Gaz, Shallan said. Rocks. Beautiful, wonderful rocks. In the distance, she saw shadows draped in a veil of misty rain. Seen together in a group like this, it was unmistakable. This was a city. A city covered over with centuries' worth of creme, like children's blocks, dribbled with many coats of melted wax. To the innocent eye, it undoubtedly looked much like the rest of the shattered plains. But it was, oh, so much more. It was proof. Even this formation Shallan stood upon had probably once been a building. Weathered on the stormward side, dribbled with creme down the leeward side to create the bulbous, uneven slope they had climbed. Brightness! She ignored the voices from down below, instead waving impatiently for the spyglass. Gaz handed it to her, and she raised it to inspect the plateaus ahead. Unfortunately, the thing had fogged up on one end. She tried to rub it clean, rain washing over her. But the fog was on the inside. Blasted device. Brightness? Gaz asked. Shouldn't we, listen to what they're saying down below? More twisted Parshendi spotted, Shallan said, raising the spyglass again. Wouldn't the designer of the thing have built it to be sealed on the inside, to prevent moisture from getting in? Gaz and Vatha stepped back as several members of Bridge 4 reached the top of the incline.
Brightness, one of the bridgemen said. High Prince Dalinar has withdrawn the vanguard and ordered a secure perimeter on the plateau behind us.
He was a tall, handsome man, whose arms seemed entirely too long for his body. Shallan looked with dissatisfaction at the inner plateaus.
Brightness, the bridgeman continued reluctantly. He did say that if you wouldn't come, he would send Adolin to, cart you back over his shoulder.
I would like to see him do that, Shallan said. It did sound kind of romantic, the sort of thing you'd read of in a novel. He's that worried about the Parshendi?
Relaine says we're practically to their home plateau, Brightness. Too many of their patrols have been spotted. Please.
We need to get in there, Shallan said, pointing. That's where the secrets are.
Brightness.
Very well, she said, turning and hiking down the incline. She slipped, which did not help her dignity, but Vatha caught her arm before she tumbled onto her face. Once down, they quickly crossed this smaller plateau, joining scouts who were jogging back toward the bulk of the army. Relaine claimed to know nothing himself of the Oathgate, or even really much about the city,
which he called Narak instead of Stormseat. He said his people had only taken up permanent residence here following the Alethi invasion. During the push inward, Dalinar's soldiers had spotted an increasing number of Parshendi and had clashed with them in brief skirmishes. General Kahl thought that the forays had been intended to draw the army off course, though how they would figure that Shallan didn't know. But she did know she was growing tired of feeling damp all the time. They had been out here nearly 2 weeks now, and some of the soldiers had begun to mutter that the army would need to return to the war camp soon, or risk not getting back before the high storms resumed. Shallan stalked across the bridge and passed several lines of spearmen setting up behind short wave-like ridges in the stone, likely the footings of old walls. She found Dalinar and the other high princes in a tent set up at the center of camp. It was one of six identical tents, and it wasn't immediately obvious which one held the four high princes. A safety precaution of some sort, she assumed. As Shallan stepped in out of the rain, she intruded upon their conversation.
"The current plateau does have some very favorable defense positions," Aladar said, gesturing toward a map set out on the travel table before them. "I prefer our chances against an assault here to moving deeper."
"And if we move deeper," Dalinar said with a grunt, "we'll be in danger of getting split during an attack, half on one plateau, half on the other."
"But do they even need to attack?" Roian said.
"If I were them, I'd just form up out there as if to prepare for an attack, but then I wouldn't. I'd stall, forcing my enemy to get stuck out here waiting for an attack until the high storms returned."
"He makes a valid point," Aladar admitted.
"Trust a coward," Sabariel said, "to know the smartest way to stay out of fighting."
He sat with Pallona beside the table, eating fruit and smiling pleasantly.
"I am not a coward," Roian said, forming fists at his sides.
"I didn't mean it as an insult," Sabariel said.
"My insults are far more pithy. That was a compliment. If I had my way, I'd hire you to run all wars, Roian. I suspect there would be far fewer casualties, and the price of undergarments would double once soldiers were told that you were in charge. I'd make a fortune."
Shallan handed her dripping coat to a servant, then took off her cap and began drying her hair with a towel. "We need to press closer to the center of the plains," she said. "Roian is right. I refuse to let us bivouac. The Parshendi will just wait us out." The others looked to her.
"I wasn't aware," Dalinar said, "that you decided our tactics, Brightness Shallan."
"It's our own fault, Dalinar," Sabariel said, "for giving her so much leeway. We probably should have tossed her off the pinnacle weeks ago, the moment she arrived at that meeting."
Shallan was stirring up a retort as the tent flaps parted and Adolin trudged in, shard plate streaming. He pushed up his faceplate.
"Storms! He looked so good, even when you could see only half his face," she smiled.
"They are definitely agitated," Adolin said.
He saw her and gave her a quick smile before clinking up to the table.
"There are at least 10,000 of those twisted Parshendi out there, moving in groups around the plateaus."
10,000, Aladar said with a grunt.
"We can take 10,000. Even with them having the terrain advantage, even if we have to assault rather than defend, we should handle that many with ease. We have over 30,000.
"This is what we came to do," Dalinar said.
He looked at Shallan, who blushed at her forwardness earlier.
"Your portal, the one you think is out here, where would it be?"
"Closer to the city," Shallan said.
"What are those red eyes?" Roian asked.
He looked very uncomfortable.
"And the flashes of light they cause when they fight. Storms, when I spoke earlier, I didn't mean that I wanted us to go farther. I was just worried at what the Parshendi would do. There's no easy way to do this, is there?"
"So far as Relaine has said,
Navani said from her seated position at the side of the room. Only their soldiers can jump between plateaus. But we can assume the new form capable of it as well. They can flee us if we push forward. Dalinar shook his head.
They set up on the plains, rather than fleeing all those years ago, because they knew it was their best chance for survival. On the open, unbroken rock of the Stormlands, they could be hunted and destroyed. Out here, they have the advantage. They won't abandon it now. Not if they think they can fight us.
If we want to make them fight, then, Aladar said, we need to threaten their homes. I guess we really should press toward the city.
Shallan relaxed. Each step closer to the center, by Relaine's explanations they were but half a day away, got her closer to the Oath Gate. Dalinar leaned forward, spreading his hands to the sides, his shadow falling on the battle maps.
Very well. I did not come all this way to timidly wait upon Parshendi whims. We'll march inward tomorrow, threaten their city, and force them to engage.
The closer we get, Sabariel noted, the more likely we are to become cut off without hope of retreat.
Dalinar didn't respond, but Shallan knew what he was thinking.
We gave up hope of retreat days ago.
A flight across days and days of plateaus would be a disaster if the Parshendi decided to harry. The Alethi fought here, and they won, seizing the shelter of Narak. That was their only option. Dalinar adjourned the meeting and the High Princes left, surrounded by groups of aides holding umbrellas. Shallan waited as Dalinar caught her eyes. In moments, only she, Dalinar, Adolin, and Navani remained. Navani walked up to Dalinar, taking his arm with both of hers, an intimate posture.
This portal of yours, Dalinar said.
Yes? Shallan asked. Dalinar looked up and met her eyes.
How real is it?
Yasna was convinced it was completely real. She was never wrong.
This would be a storming bad time for her to break her record, he said softly. I agreed to press forward in part because of your exploration.
Thank you.
I did not do it for scholarship, Dalinar said. From what Navani tells me, this portal offers a unique opportunity for retreat. I had hoped to defeat the Parshendi before danger overtook us, whatever it was. Judging by what we've seen, danger has arrived early.
Shallan nodded.
Tomorrow is the last day of the countdown, Dalinar said, scribbled on the walls during high storms. Whatever it is, whatever it was, we meet it tomorrow. And you are my backup plan, Shallan Devar. You will find this portal and you will make it work. If the evil overwhelms us, your pathway will be our escape. You may be the only chance that our armies, and indeed Alethkar itself, have for survival.
Days passed, and Kaladin refused to let the rain overcome him. He limped through the camp, using a crutch that Lopin had fetched for him, despite objecting that it was too soon for Kaladin to be up and about. The place was still empty, save for the occasional parshman lugging wood from the forests outside, or carrying sacks of grain. The camp didn't get any news about the expedition. The king was probably being sent word via Spanreed, but he didn't share it with everyone else. Storms, this place feels eerie, Kaladin thought, limping past deserted barracks, rain pattering against the umbrella that Lopin had tied to Kaladin's crutch. It worked. Kind of. He passed rainspren, like blue candles sprouting from the ground, each with a single eye in the center of its top. Creepy things. Kaladin had always disliked them. He fought the rain. Did that make any sense? It seemed that the rain wanted him to stay inside, so he went out. The rain wanted him to give in to the despair, so he forced himself to think. Growing up, he'd had Tien to help lighten the gloom. Now even thinking of Tian increased that gloom instead. Though he couldn't avoid it, the weeping reminded him of his brother. Of laughter when the darkness threatened, of cheerful joy and carefree optimism. Those images warred with ones of Tian's death. Kaladin squeezed his eyes shut, trying to banish that memory, of the frail young man, barely trained, being cut down. Tian's own company of soldiers had put him at the front as a distraction, a sacrifice to slow the enemy. Kaladin set his jaw, opening his eyes. No more moping. He would not whine or wallow. Yes, he'd lost Syl. He'd lost many loved ones during his life. He would survive this agony as he had survived the others. He continued his limping circuit of the barracks. He did this 4 times a day. Sometimes Lopin came with him, but today Kaladin was alone. He splashed through puddles of water and found himself smiling because he wore the boots Shallan had stolen from him. I never did believe she was a horn-eater, he thought. I need to make sure she knows that. He stopped, leaning on the crutch and looking out through the rain toward the shattered plains. He couldn't see far. The haze of rainfall prevented that. You come back safely, he thought to those out there. All of you. This time I can't help you if something goes wrong. Rock, Teft, Dalinar, Adolin, Shallan, everyone in Bridge 4, all out on their own. How different a place would the world be if Kaladin had been a better man? If he'd used his powers and had returned to the war camp with Shallan full of stormlight? He had been so close to revealing what he could do. You'd been thinking that for weeks, he thought to himself. You'd never have done it. You were too scared. He hated admitting it, but it was true. Well, if his suspicions about Shallan were true, perhaps Dalinar would have his radiant anyway. Maybe she would make a better run of it than Kaladin had. He continued on his limping way, rounding back to Bridge 4's barrack. He stopped when he saw a fine carriage pulled by horses bearing the king's livery, waiting in front of it. Kaladin cursed, hobbling forward. Lopin ran out to meet him, not carrying an umbrella. A lot of people gave up on trying to stay dry during the weeping.
Lopin, Kaladin said. What? He's waiting for you, Goncho, Lopin said, gesturing urgently. The king himself.
Kaladin limped more quickly toward his room. The door was open and Kaladin peeked in to find King Elokar standing inside, looking about the small chamber. Moash guarded the door, and Taka, a former member of the king's guard, stood nearer to the king.
Your Majesty? Kaladin asked.
Ah, the king said. Bridge man.
Elokar's cheeks were flushed. He'd been drinking, though he didn't appear drunk. Kaladin understood. With Dalinar and that disapproving glare of his gone for a time, it was probably nice to relax with a bottle. When Kaladin had first met the king, he'd thought Elokar lacked regality. Now, oddly, he thought Elokar did look like a king. It wasn't that the king had changed. The man still had his imperious features, with that overly large nose and condescending manner. The change was in Kaladin. The things he'd once associated with kingship, honor, strength of arms, nobility, had been replaced with Elokar's less inspiring attributes.
This is really all that Dalinar assigns one of his officers? Elokar asked, gesturing around the room. That man. He expects everyone to live with his own austerity. It is as if he's completely forgotten how to enjoy himself.
Kaladin looked to Moash, who shrugged, shardplate clinking. The king cleared his throat.
I was told you were too weak to make the trip to see me. I see that might not be the case.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty, Kaladin said. I'm not well, but I walk the camp each day to rebuild my strength. I feared that my weakness and appearance might be offensive to the throne.
You've learned to speak politically, I see, the king said, folding his arms. The truth is that my command is meaningless, even to a dark eyes. I no longer have authority in the eyes of men.
Great. Here we go again, the king waved curtly.
Out, you other two. I'd speak to this man alone.
Moash glanced at Kaladin, looking concerned, but Kaladin nodded. With reluctance, Moash and Taka walked out, shutting the door, leaving them to the light of a few dwindling spheres that the king set out. Soon those wouldn't have any stormlight to them at all. It had been too long without a high storm. They'd need to break out candles and oil lamps.
How did you know? The king asked him. How to be a hero?
Your Majesty? Kaladin asked, sagging against his crutch.
A hero, the king said, waving flippantly. Everyone loves you, Bridgeman. You saved Dalinar, you fought Shardbearers, you came back after falling into the storming chasms. How do you do it? How do you know?
It's really just luck, Your Majesty.
No, no, the king said. He began pacing. It's a pattern, though I can't figure it out. When I try to be strong, I make a fool of myself. When I try to be merciful, people walk all over me. When I try to listen to counsel, it turns out I've picked the wrong men. When I try to do everything on my own, Dalinar has to take over, lest I ruin the kingdom. How do people know what to do? Why don't I know what to do? I was born to this office, given the throne by the Almighty himself. Why would he give me the title but not the capacity? It defies reason. And yet everyone seems to know things that I do not. My father could rule even the likes of Sadius. Men loved Gavilar, feared him, and served him all at once. I can't even get a Dark Eyes to obey a command to come visit the palace. Why doesn't this work? What do I have to do?
Kaladin stepped back, shocked at the frankness.
Why are you asking me this, Your Majesty? Because you know the secret, the king said, still pacing. I've seen how your men regard you. I've heard how people speak of you. You're a hero, Bridgeman.
He stopped, then walked up to Kaladin, taking him by the arms.
Can you teach me?
Kaladin regarded him, baffled.
I want to be a king like my father was,
Elokar said.
I want to lead men. I want them to respect me. I don't...
Kaladin swallowed.
I don't know if that's possible, Your Majesty.
Elokar narrowed his eyes at Kaladin.
So you do still speak your mind, even after the trouble it brought you. Tell me, do you think me a bad king, Bridgeman?
Yes. The king drew in a sharp breath, still holding Kaladin by the arms. I could do it right here, Kaladin realized. Strike the king down, put Dalinar on the throne. No hiding, no secrets, no cowardly assassination. A fight, him and me. That seemed a more honest way to be about it. Sure, Kaladin would probably be executed, but he found that didn't bother him. Should he do it? For the good of the kingdom? He could imagine Dalinar's anger, Dalinar's disappointment. Death didn't bother Kaladin, but failing Dalinar, storms. The king let go and stalked away.
Well, I did ask, he muttered to himself. I merely have to win you over as well. I will figure this out. I will be a king to be remembered.
Or you could do what is best for Alethkar, Kaladin said, and step down. The king stopped in place. He turned on Kaladin, expression darkening.
Do not overstep yourself, Bridgeman. Bah! I should never have come here.
I agree, Kaladin said. He found this entire experience surreal. Elokar made to leave. He stopped at the door, not looking at Kaladin.
When you came, the shadows went away.
The shadows?
I saw them in mirrors, in the corners of my eyes. I could swear I even heard them whispering. But you frightened them. I haven't seen them since. There's something about you. Don't try to deny it.
The king looked to him.
I'm sorry for
for what I did to you. I watched you fight to help Adolin, and then I saw you defend Renarin. And I grew jealous. There you were, such a champion, so loved, and everyone hates me. I should have gone to fight myself. Instead, I overreacted to your challenge of Amaram. You weren't the one who ruined our chance against Sarius. It was me. Dalinar was right. Again. I'm so tired of him being right and me being wrong. In light of that, I am not at all surprised that you find me a bad king.
Elikar pushed open the door and left.